Good. Okay. I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation to visit and speak. This talk, all of this, most of this is joint work with Kiran Kedlaya and Liang Xiao. And I'd also like to quickly thank Roshan Liu for giving about half my talk for me on Monday. That means we'll only go a little bit over. So throughout the talk, K over QP is a finite extension. When I write gamma, this will be the Galois group of the P power cyclotomic extension of K. A will be an affinoid algebra over QP. I'll write RA for the Rober ring, B dagger rig, K completed tensor product with A. So we have auxiliary endomorphisms, auxiliary coefficients. This has a natural action of phi and gamma. And just to recall, this is a direct limit of global sections on an annulus, sort of depending upon this variable shrinking annulus, times the analytic space associated to A. Another ring we'll be working with is, I'll call it R plus A of gamma. And by analogy with over here, this is the global sections of the structure sheaf of, I'll call the analytic character group of gamma times the space for A. So what is this? This is the rigid analytic space parametrizing continuous p-adic characters of gamma. One might call it the gamma weight space. And this whole space here is a disjoint union of unit A disks. So that's what that... Where? What gamma what? Of course they're different gammas. So this is a Fréchet-Stein algebra. Because this is a quasi-Stein space. And it's a completion, a Fréchet completion of the Iwasawa algebra of gamma with coefficients in A. So it's some sort of beefing up of the Iwasawa algebra over A. There are two possible notions, at least that are natural to me, of phi gamma module over RA. The first one is finite projective RA module with, of course, action semilinear continuous commuting actions of phi and gamma, where phi induces an isomorphism, and coherent sheaves, coherent sheaf on one of these annuli with actions of phi and gamma as a sheaf. And proposition. These two data are equivalent. And the idea of the proof is, certainly given one, by Keel's theorem, we can make it two. So it's the other direction that's interesting. We're trying to take the global sections of such a sheaf, and by the quasi-Stein formalism, say in Schneider-Teitelbaum's paper, if global sections will determine it, we just need to show that the global sections are finitely generated or finitely presented. So given two, so we take global sections. And so this is reason the quasi-Stein formalism. And the phi structure allows us to show that that it's uniformly finitely presented. Which means that if we cover this disk by an increasing an aphenoid annulus and then another aphenoid annulus overlapping that and further out, the number of generators and relations can be taken to be bounded above uniformly. We take generators on one of these and we use the phi structure to pull the generators back, so we have a bounded number. And then when you have a uniformly bounded set of generators and relations, then you can use that bounded above set and somehow patch all of those generators, approximate them by a global section, single global sections that approximate them on each annulus. So approximate generators by a finite list of global sections. And that gives the data as in one. So the upshot is that from now on we can work geometrically when it's easier. This argument of gluing uniformly finitely presented things allows us to avoid looking at, say, boundedness properties over the annulus. We just work patches at a time. Is this thing coming off? Okay. So I'm going to make a definition. These are the main objects of the talk. I'm going to let F be either phi or its left inverse psi. And I'm going to fix a topological generator. And I'll let you guys guess what to do when p equals 2, and this isn't procyclic. And so the complex associated to f and gamma is going to be the total complex associated to the bicomplex. And then I have a phi gamma module m. Okay. Working? Okay. So we have M, 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 and M. And I'll take gamma minus 1, gamma minus 1, F minus 1, F minus 1. And this is taken to be in degrees 0 to 2. And of course, we'll denote by similar notation the objects in the derived category. And their cohomology groups over as A modules. So this is, I like to call this the Galois cohomology. It's also the air complex. And the other definition along these lines is C psi of M is just the cone of the operator psi minus 1. So this is in degrees 1 and 2. And this will give rise to similar notations, R gamma psi of M and H star psi of M. And these are over this ring of distributions on gamma. And this is called the Uesala cohomology. For reasons going back to as I read, unpublished work of Fontaine written up by Charbonnier Colmes, because in the case of Gal representations, it recovers the Ussal cohomology. So why are these useful? These are useful for two reasons. Useful because, on the one hand, they measure X groups. So Hi phi gamma of M is Xi phi gamma of the trivial object into M. For I is equal to 0 or 1. And in the case where M is associated to a Galois representation, so I have D dagger rig of some V, or a Galois representation over A, then this is isomorphic to the continuous cohomology of G, K acting on V. Now, that explains why I care about the first of these, where F is gamma. Why do we care about the one when F is psi? That's because the morphism of complexes, where I have 1, 1, minus psi, minus psi, gives a quasi-isomorphism from the phi gamma complex to the psi gamma complex. So the proof of this follows some standard recipes. So since psi is surjective, it suffices, if you stare at the algebra a bit, to have gamma minus 1 be bijective on the kernel of psi. And now there's a clean write-up of the argument due to Chenevier. And but we use instead this geometric version to remove a hypothesis that he had to make. So he had to use some sort of boundedness. He called it gamma bounded hypothesis. But we don't need any sort of boundedness. We're just working locally. So, and then the reason why the Ussal cohomology might be related to these X groups is somehow tautological almost, that that if we take the Ussal cohomology and we L-tensor it from the distribution algebra to A by just killing off gamma, then that's the same thing as the psi gamma cohomology. So if we can control the Ussal cohomology, we can control these other relevant cohomologies. So here's our main theorem. R gamma psi of M is isomorphic in the derived category to a perfect complex in degree 0, 2 over R plus A of gamma. So this is a finiteness and finite projected dimension theorem. I'm going to note out loud that some people might be confused. This is a complex in degrees 1 and 2. Why am I writing 0, 2? Can't we do something more efficient? But no, there's torsion in H1, and that needs some 0 complex to resolve it. But as a consequence, that torsion is projected dimension 1. Right. So a bunch of consequences. Uh, This is a long list. Well, certainly, the phi gamma cohomology of M is now also a perfect complex in degree 0, 2 over A. And we have a finite generation or finite presentation. So H star psi of M are finitely presented over R plus A of gamma, and the R H star phi gamma M are finitely generated over A. And that's very often how we'll use the result. We also, once we have this situation, we can generalize arguments that are out there for the Euler-Poincaré characteristic. So the Euler-Poincaré characteristic of, say, the Galois homology, this is, and then the same as the Euler-Poincaré characteristic of the Ussal homology. And this is the usual thing, like in Tate, it's minus degree of K over QP times the rank of M. In fact, for the Ussal cohomology, of course, by definition, H0 psi is 0. We can show that H2 psi is torsion. And it follows from that H1 psi has generic rank equal to this. Okay, so that follows. Also, a base change theorem follows. And I'll refer to this later as BC. I'm sure I'll refer to this later as EP. If A to B is any continuous affinoid algebra map, then we do the obvious tensoring operation. So we take R gamma psi of M and we L tensor that over the ring for A to the ring for B, and we get exactly the complex if we had formed it with M changed from A to B. And similarly, we take the Galois cohomology of M and we L tensor it over A with B, and we get the Galois cohomology of M changed to B. So, of course, this gives Tor spectral sequences. Which are degenerate in the flat case. And therefore it shows that that formation of Galois cohomology compiles to an analytic sheaf, to a coherent analytic sheaf over the space associated A. And ditto with Iwasawa cohomology. Ditto Iwasawa over these disks over A. We also have analogs of Tate duality. So this is a R gamma phi gamma of the dual of M. All the way? Thank you. This is isomorphic to the dual in even the naive sense of the cohomology of M. And similarly for the Iwasawa cohomology, but you need to slightly fudge the result, as is common in Iwasawa theoretic duality theorems. There's this twist. So we're Yoda is inversion on gamma. And finally, you can easily compare this explains the origin of the Iwasawa cohomology. This is isomorphic to the Gawa cohomology of the cyclotomic deformation of M. And in the case when you're associated to a Gawa representation, this is the classical Iwasawa cohomology of V, base change from the Iwasawa algebra over A to this distribution algebra over A. Okay, so that's the statement of the theorem and the load of main consequences. Remarks on the background or on the history are that partial versions, this generalizes results by a lot of other people. So in the case where A is equal to QP, and for phi gamma modules, it's all started off with work of Air. Roshwan generalized it to the Rober ring, and then I did the version for Iwasawa cohomology of the Rober ring. When K is equal to QP, and M was one of these R of deltas, so the basic building block is something trianguline. Work was originally done by Colmez and then generalized by Belaish and Chenevier in separate works. And then in general, but for H0 and some base change results, were due to Roshwan, and this is what he talked about on Monday. Okay, so I'm looking at my time real quick. Good. So I'm going to mention two applications, and then I'm going to sketch the main ideas of the proof. So, application one. Granted a triangulation, of V over A, the finiteness theorem and the coherent sheaves that I mentioned over there give a theory of Greenberg-style Selmer groups. For this Galois representation, but since triangulations happen in non-ordinary scenarios, we get Greenberg ordinary Selmer groups for non-ordinary things. So even in many non-ordinary settings, so a couple of instances of this for cyclotomic deformations. You get an explanation of Perrin-Ryu's theory of Perrin-Ryu's Iwasawa theory. In particular, she constructed algebraic p-adic L functions, but no underlying Selmer module that they're the characteristic ideals of. This can be used to recover those actual underlying Selmer modules, so it gives a it in particular gives a home to cocycles. And she used Euler systems to give an upper bound on her characteristic ideals, but there's no way to give a lower bound a la Ribbett's method unless you have a place to actually put cocycles you can construct. So this allows, for instance, and I'll leave this as an exercise to the participants, to generalize Skinner-Urban to the non-ordinary case. Okay. The other instance, this hasn't been complete. This is a partial result. It allows to generalize Nakovar's work on parity conjectures. Nakovar's parity conjecture arguments. So by varying on the eigencurve, we can show the parity conjecture, is its validity is constant along irreducible components. So this part of the argument is what generalizes. So we could reduce to weight 2, where it's known by Hagner and Kalivagin methods, reduce to weight 2, so Kalivagin style things, Vagin, I'll put quotes because of course there are all sorts of other names that are involved with that, such as Kornu-Vatsal and generalizations thereof. We could reduce if we knew that there is a weight 2 point. And this would be implied by the numerical evidence of Buzzard-Kilford. See, if this conjecture about, so they computed that in the weight 2 level 1 case, the eigencurve, all the components towards the boundary of weight space, their slopes go to 0. And eventually those slopes drop below 1/2. And by Coleman's classicality theorem, you have classical weight 2 points. So if this computation generalizes to other weights and levels, then we'll always have classical weight 2 points. So that's the sense in which this is partial, but at least it's reduced to something that's purely about the geometry of the eigencurve. Okay. So that's one application, is the variation of Selmer groups. The other application is to triangulation, which was the title of this talk. So we get triangulation of eigenvarieties. So one way of seeing it is that Rochon's argument carries over with little change. All of the theorems that he proves, not all of them, the key ones for his method can be pulled out of the finiteness of H0 and the base change properties. And so you just take those and plug them into the rest of his argument. But here's another way of working it out. So let me explain maybe how, if you knew this finiteness theorem, how you would go about trying to produce the triangulation. So this is kind of a sketch of an argument. It's not going to be completely precise, so bear with me. But the core ideas are in here. If you read our paper, it's very, very it's very similar to this. So by the way, what you would do with his argument, what he does, is you inductively build a filtration. So non-trivial M1 contained in M2 and so on up to MD, which is M. So I'm going to call, rank MI is equal to I, with generically each graded MI mod I minus 1 is isomorphic to something like an RA of delta I. So we want to avoid... Yeah. I said it's rough in some ways, twisted by some line bundle because this isomorphism might just be varying a little bit over A in some weird way. Okay, L line bundle over A. So one problem possibly with this is, so you build M0, you build a subobject, and after you write down the quotient, if you haven't properly saturated M, you might get some torsion. So there might be some weirdness. These modules might be sort of slightly larger, slightly smaller than the ones you care about. And then once you've modded out by it, the resulting thing, if it's not finite projective anymore, you have to work with slightly more general versions of all of these theorems. So I'm going to avoid torsion phenomenon by building... No torsion? Okay. It's not? Oh, it looked a lot like what you were doing. You're pulling out a sub-object that... Okay. So... we found it, when we were working this out, easier to avoid torsion phenomena by building from the top down. So what we're going to do is we're going to inductively build. So I'm going to let MD be M, and we're going to build homomorphism FD into RA delta D, say. And then this doesn't happen on the nose. Again, you need this a line bundle over A because it might be a little twisty. And then we're going to set MD minus 1 is the kernel of FD. And then this is going to be still finite projective. And so now we don't have to work with algebraic technicalities. And then induct, where M D minus 1, we're going to find a map F D minus 1 into R A delta D minus 1, tensor line model L D minus 1, and so on. Okay, so how will you find such a thing? So here is how to find what do we want? We want Li, and Fi is going to be an element, the Hom phi gamma from Mi into R A of delta I. I guess tensor Li. Well, we're going to identify this with the Galois cohomology group. This is 80 phi gamma of Mi dual twisted by delta I. And I can pull out the Li like that. Inverse. So by base change, the base change theorem gives the spectral sequence E2PQ is Tor minus PHQ of MI dual delta I with the residue field at a point Z converging to HP plus Q phi gamma of now the specialized module to Z for all Z in MA. And now I'm going to take P plus Q equals 0. So we're looking at all of these HOMs at points. And now if at a big set of Zs, this thing's non-zero. So to say a Zariski dense set on spec A, the specializations of the M were, say, triangulene, then all of these will be non-zero. But now let's look at these Tor terms. When P is bigger than zero, by finite generation, these Tors are finitely generated modules, and they're supported on higher codimensional subsets. But if something in the sequence has to be non-zero on a Zariski dense set, it's going to have to be then the P equals zero term. And therefore, the H to the global H zero had to be non-zero. So I'm going to note the H Q phi gamma of Mi star delta I. Here we're using the finiteness theorem, are finitely generated over A, and for P greater than zero, the tors supported on closed proper subset in spec A. This will imply then that if many Mi delta I, Mi star, delta I, Z stars have non-zero H0, then so does Mi star, delta I. And that's the argument for producing sections. That's the argument for producing Fs. I was just about to get to that. So two issues with the argument. Two issues with this argument. The first issue is that the non-torsion sections say Fi might not have saturated image. And so we'll always be an exceptional set. Set, say, Z inside of spec A, which is closed and proper. And then the second one is, he's right. How do we know the structure of this 8-0 that we're pulling stuff out of? So how to choose a nice section? How to choose a nice section of 8-0 phi gamma m star delta I? And what we can prove under suitable hypotheses which are very natural hypotheses, they're not really very restrictive, after a blow up in A, we can arrange it to be a line bundle. And then we're going to take that Li to be the inverse of that, to be that, so that we just take the unit section in that tensor product. So we just show Rochon that we can just blow up, and then it becomes as nice as you want. The hypotheses that make it a line bundle are basically that at the Zariski dense set of points, there's a unique triangulation with the given parameters. If there's only one triangulation up to rigidification, then that's enough to get a line bundle. Okay. So I'm going to end the example with that and a question. In the case of the eigencurve, can one find a modular proof of this triangulation? A modular construction of the triangulation. So what do I mean by that? This proof is purely local and has nothing to do with the eigencurve. You can just plug it in. The eigencurve is an input, but I want to compare this to the work of Mazur Wiles, who in the ordinary part showed this reducibility when restricted to P by examining the structure of the P power torsion group schemes of modular Jacobians. So they pulled it out of the data. And what's necessary in this case need a souped-up overconvergent Eichler-Shimura isomorphism. one that tells you about the families with the gamma modules on it. Well, that should be a that could count as a souped up. And they're philosophically doing the same thing. But I haven't been able to work out those details myself, so. Okay. So if the remainder of my time, I'm going to outline the ideas of the proof of the main theorem. So sketch of main theorem, which, remember, was that this Iwasawa cohomology is a perfect complex 0 to of R A plus of gamma. So by induction, by inducing induction is in terms of inducing characters, inducing representations, we assume that K is QP because there's a Shapiro's lemma for phi gamma modules. And in this case, when K is QP, A is a Laurent series with coefficients in A in a variable pi, which is Fontan's log 2 pi I. So we can make things very explicit. There's a standard computation. Now it's standard, which I first saw in work of Liu and A's QP that shows it computes the cohomology of M mod powers of P for both of the cohomology theories, and it shows that we can replace M by any T to the NM. There's a couple of reduction steps. So the main step one is to treat H2. So we have the following proposition. We show directly that H2 psi T to the NM is finitely generated over A and in fact vanishes for n sufficiently negative. And the idea of the proof is as follows. We choose a basis. We reduce to somehow the project the free case. So we choose a basis MI of the module. Then we use the fact that C is somehow contracting. It contracts sums. So what does a general element look like? It looks like a sum aij pi to the I mj, where the I range over z and the j are, say, 1 up to however many. And it contracts this towards the direct sum of I in z intersected some range A to B, J is 1 to N, that's a J, of A pi to the I MJ. It contracts towards it, and by limiting argument, we can swoop it all the way in for suitable A and B, for suitable A and B in R. But now this here is finitely generated over A. And we do this quantitatively. And if you do it quantitatively, you find that when N is sufficiently negative, you can squeeze these two real numbers to lie between two integers. And therefore, it's an empty sum. And that's what gives the second part of the statement. Okay, so the finiteness isn't all. I mean, it doesn't tell you anything about finite projective dimension. So how will we use it? We have a second proposition. Sorry? I don't think we checked that worked, but I also can't possibly validate or refute such a question at the board. So, so what we do instead is okay. So first, because of this proposition, we're replacing m by t to the sufficiently negative power, sufficiently positive power times m, we assume that m star 1, the Cartier dual, has h2 psi equal to 0. So we will assume this from now on. That is written very poorly. This is what we assume. So proposition 2, under this hypothesis, there exists a short exact sequence, 0 to our m to some other module n to a p to 0, where this is of the form Ra delta, such that we have the following exact sequences. So in the long exact sequence of cohomology, of Iwasawa cohomology, we have this is 0, and we have this map is non-zero. And on the duals, h2 psi p star 1 mapping to h2 psi n star 1 to h2 psi m star 1, such that we have this is equal to 0. And so when we replace, so replacing m by n, n also satisfies the hypothesis. Remember, our hypothesis is that this is 0, and therefore this is 0. Then we preserve the hypothesis, and decrease, well, we have that h2n is a non-trivial quotient of h2m. It's a proper quotient. So we decrease h2c of m. And by, since this is all using, by the finite tightness of these h2s over a, and a is Noetherian, by Noetherian induction, eventually, h2psi m is equal to 0. And by the exact sequences involved, it suffices to show that this new module has cohomology that's a perfect complex, and then it gets passed on to all the ones before it. So the proof of the proposition of proposition is all you have to do is take this delta character to be sufficiently irrational. So you want its sen weight to be very far away from the sen weights of m, and maybe it to have a different slope from all of the things that looks like slopes of m. And once you've done that, you just use the Euler-Poincaré formula and start counting, and it falls right out. So that finishes step one. Wait. So step two is to tackle H1. So under the hypothesis that H2 psi of M and H2 psi of M star 1 are both 0, which...
Sorry, when you say you're playing with H2, exactly what did you prove?
We proved that it suffices to show it under that to show the perfectness under this hypothesis. That we can reduce to a case, that the perfectness of M is equivalent to the perfectness of N, and now, but we can do this for enough N such that the H2 is 0. So we've somehow eliminated having to consider H2. This is maybe more of like a general guide. I mean, perfectness is not a property of degrees of cohomology, so simply put, this is somehow where we consider the contribution to the problem from H2 in a vaguer sense. But the upshot is that we can assume this is 0. The first one being before step 1, step 0. Okay, so first I'm going to note that when we have a finite morphism from A to B, then the base change property is easy. And the main reason is that the completed tensor product from A with B is just the tensor product from A with B. And then anything that might be difficult in the base change theorem becomes just basic algebra. So we're going to use that when B is a residue field at a point. So what we do is we construct a duality pairing. On H1 psi M cross H1 psi of M star 1, which is compatible with the pairing, the same pairing after base changing over A with cap of Z, where Z is an M of A. So it's this pairing itself will reduce mod a maximal ideal to the pairing mod a maximal ideal. But you see, over a point, the duality is known. Use known duality over cap of Z. To get enough of the duality. Duality what? Duality on Iwasawa cohomology where A is a field. In the distributions on gamma. There might be Sorry? Well, there are two. You can renormalize it if you want. You can make in an invariant pairing or a bilinear pairing, there are two ways to write it down. It's not a substantial difference, I don't think. Anyways, the point is you can get enough duality at enough points, or from looking at enough points, to force duality to hold, and therefore when a duality holds in an algebraic sense, the module itself had to be finite projective to force the H1 psi M to be finite projective. And this forcing here, the way we bootstrap from points uses in a non-trivial way, I think, uses that we're working with Iwasawa cohomology and not phi gamma cohomology. Uses phi rather than... It's a lot easier to compare the duality at the points and force some duality up top in the fee case, in the Psi case, as opposed to the fee gamma case. So this is one of the reasons why when proving this theorem, we didn't just give a proof for phi and gamma, we didn't just give a proof for Psi. We did the proof for Psi and deduced it the other way because this forcing step is easier. That's why we went through Iwasawa cohomology. So, now we have the H1 is finite projective, and that proves the perfectness. And I'll stop there.